What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know. But no one ever asked.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
Hey,
how you doing?
We are going into Super Bowl week. What are the keys to victory for the Cincinnati Bengals?
They've invested $230 million in their defense. They've done and you can see their return, their ROI, return on their investment on defense is coming back. The way they shut down King Henry. Yes, he wasn't 100%, but that man ain't a tiptoeer now. He was still, even though he wasn't 100%, he was dropping
still,
a load on some
still
folks.
Still has a different dynamic.
He has a different dynamic. They play
and
extremely
you
well.
You have to account for him.
Yep. Awuzie, he was a free agent from the Cowboys. They decided to go with Anthony Brown, the Cowboys, and you can see Awuzie's paying dividends for that investment for the Cowboys, letting him walk.
Yeah.
Jesse Bates III, all-star, right? Yeah. He's all-star. He's a guy. He's making plays. He gets his head in the game so much that he's not afraid to get ran over. He will get ran over a few times, but he shows up every play.
And he's not afraid. He'll pick one off, too.
He will. So he's very smart. From the shoulders up. IQ of football is outstanding. From the shoulders down, it's remarkable as well.
So what are your keys to the game for the Los Angeles Rams?
Los Angeles Rams, can their defense maintain their dominance? Floyd, Donald, and Von Miller cannot have an off day. Mm. Got my guy back who I saw him at the Rose Bowl. We were chit-chatting and talking.
Oh, yeah, your boy Eric.
Now he's playing, right? So that's pretty remarkable. That's awesome. Love what, you know, you have to address the elephant in the room is look at the explosiveness and getting the man, taking those handcuffs off and allowing him to be the Odell Beckham that we've mm-hmm. loved to see that makes the spectacular grabs, that makes the yards after catch. Yeah. He's playing well, and you got him with Cooper Kupp.
So you got Cooper Kupp on the well, that end? Ebony that makes it listen, that makes it things a whole lot different.
You could call him Ebony and Ivory. You can call him hot chocolate and marshmallows.
Rick James and Tina Marie.
Hey, them brothers are singing a good song and a great combination, right? It's awesome, right? Yeah. Just watching them play. But, you know, Matthew Stafford is battling mm-hmm. a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. The Rams have had some injuries. You know, a little bit with Whitworth and some of those guys on the offensive line, but they're playing great. And Cam Akin coming back, he's been a spark plug.
So there you have it. Those are the keys to victory for Super Bowl 56. Let's see what happens. I know, right? That's crazy.
Dang, 56. You old.
And you older than me, so what that says?
Cut. Hey, man, welcome to the Cut to a Podcast, man. Chris Canty, former defensive tackle. Also, you played in, too. You played a lot of different things. For a big man, you were very versatile.
You know, the more you can do, the longer you can stay around, Smitty. Absolutely. You know that's how they get down.
Man, absolutely. Super Bowl champ with the G-Man with the New York Giants, and then also being drafted by the star, by the Dallas Cowboys, attending the University of Virginia, man. Welcome to the Cut to a Podcast with Steve Smith and Gerard Little John, man. Just thanks for taking the time, you know, out your busy schedule. You in New York and traveling, doing all the stuff you're doing out, you know, going out in Bristol. So I know, you know, you taking your time is a privilege, and we don't want to overlook that.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. I'm glad I'm finally having the opportunity and having the privilege to be on. I can't believe that you had my co-host Mike Golick Jr. on before me. Yeah. But that's a story for another day. We'll have to get that straight.
Oh, that's my fault, Chris. I'm sorry.
You ran into that one on your own.
I know.
We weren't going to throw you under the bus.
That's what's up, man. I mean, Listen, I can't say enough good things about what you've done in your post-playing career, not only the stuff that you're doing in sports media, but the stuff that you do in the community, man, and just that leadership that you've shown, that you've demonstrated, is something to be admired, and it's something that's also inspiring for the next generation of athletes following behind you.
Well, I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate it, man. Let's get into the fun stuff, man. So, if you had one extra hour of free time a day, how would you use it?
I use it to work out because I need to start getting back into working out. Yeah. It's hard for me to get motivated to work out when there's not a check on the other end of it. And with the 24 hours that I have between the business ventures that I got going on, and then the sports media stuff, making sure that I'm on top of the latest news and notes from around the sports world. It just doesn't seem like I have enough time. Mm-hmm. Also, just got engaged, so you got to
congratulations.
Appreciate it.
He finally settled down.
It's going down in August in Chicago. Finally settled down. Ah. A wonderful woman.
That brother proud. He bought the ring.
I also got to invest in that relationship too. So just like, it doesn't seem like there's enough hours in the day to get everything that I need to get done. And so the one part that's kind of fallen off since I've stopped playing is making sure that I'm regularly in the gym. So if I had an extra hour every day, I'd absolutely put that toward working out.
Man, I just think that, man, when you work out and you push yourself through it and you're forced to do it, man, when you have that freedom, you just go, no, I'm good. You just go, Then something happens. Like the mirror hits you.
Right? That tells no lies.
Right? That mirror comes.
Unless you got that funhouse mirror.
Man, then you got that mirror coming. You look, you go, oh, I just ain't what I used to be. And then you get on the scale for further confirmation. That scale say, you fat boy.
Yeah, that's what got me. Because, you know, Smitty, I'm 6'8", so, you know, I can stretch, you know, stretch way.
You think you can stretch,
frame.
But go ahead.
I think I can. But when I stepped on that scale and I saw a number, and going back to last year when we were in the middle of the pandemic, I saw a number that I had never seen before. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute, dog.
Those pandemic snacks hit different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's one thing to be in the 300s, but when you start being on the other side of 350, that's when I realized, I was like, all right, we got a problem. We got to scale this thing way back.
Hey, bro, I got up to 350. I got up to 215.
I was about to say 315.
No, I got up to 215.
Yeah.
And I'm 5'9", so 215 on 5'9"?
Yeah, you out here looking like Maurice Jones.
Oh,
leave my dog alone, man. Leave my dog. Stop it. Stop.
You know I got love for dog too. That's why I can keep it 100. Always love.
That was bad. How you said that? I don't like that. I don't like that.
That's always love.
You ain't lying, though. All right. Let's move on. We've digressed. Hey, man, what are you most grateful for right now?
I'm most grateful for the relationship that I'm in right now. Like, this is a new chapter for me, getting engaged. And
huge chapter.
Mel and I have been together for 4 years now. And just it felt like this was the official start to my life after football. Mm. Like meeting her and courting her, and then just the growth that I've seen in her and the growth that I've seen in myself. Mm. I'm grateful for that, man. I'm grateful for that. Cool. I'm grateful for my family. Everybody in my immediate family made it through the pandemic. Yeah. You know, I know we're still kind of dealing with a couple of variants, but everybody's healthy. Everybody's good. You know, all blessings on that front, man. And that's not something that I take for granted, because there are a lot of friends, a lot of former teammates who lost family members at various points during the pandemic. And so I think that's been one of those things that's kind of gave me a new level of appreciation for just, you know, health and strength and being able to love on the people that you care about the most in this world, not missing those opportunities.
Try not to get wrapped up when you follow up after what you just said and how you said it and how you, you know, what you said is sometimes we feel like we have to follow or something. You know, you try to, I'm just going back on my career and just seeing people that I enjoyed, but then also like some bugaboos or like pet peeves. And I think in a locker room, a lot of times it happens, the one upper, right? Because, you know, and so I, and so the way he said, I kind of went backwards. I'm like, man, I don't want to be that. So I'm grateful for life, right?
I think that's plenty, right? Yeah. Like being grateful, because there's a lot of people who maybe woke up and they didn't have that today.
Yeah. I just after he said it, like I just going I, back. Yeah,
that ain't a cliche thing.
Nah, but I just with Chris is right now with Chris is so different, because we'll get into the football aspect, man. Me and Chris were teammates at the right time, at the right moment, mm-hmm. with the right perspective. Mm-hmm. Right. Our perspective was so we were so unapologetic on our pursuit of being a Raven and being a bully and playing and establishing ourselves, mm-hmm. but also raising our level of expectation, because Troy was still playing at the time. Troy Polamalu. Right. Mm-hmm. Big Ben was Big Ben. They had some good players. And that was my first time in Baltimore as a Raven, and so much had transpired leading up to that, of me proving myself as a Raven, proving myself as still, you know, a 36, 37-year-old player. And Chris has known me for a long time, played against me, known me. And it was like, well, how much does he have left in the tank? And Chris, Haloti, Doom, there's a few guys that they were like, you understand what we got. And then there were some guys that like doubted me, like y'all gonna doubt Smitty, y'all gonna see him, you're gonna find out real quick. And so we'll get into later talking ball on that, because I had to establish my physicality and establish myself very early, but I also fell into some machismo, some guy interaction that even in Baltimore it took them back a little bit. And Haloti and Chris, like some of those guys saw a part of me. They were like, see, I told y'all, y'all done poked the wrong bear.
No, that's true. But we do go way back, Smitty. I mean, even to when I was in college and you were with the Carolina Panthers, my parents still called the Charlotte community home. Yep. And so I had an opportunity to get to know Smitty before I even got into the league. And then my early days with the Dallas Cowboys, I remember you used to invite me out to your annual golf outing. But just the way that you carried yourself and the class that you exhibited, but then the dog that you had on the field. Like, I was just like, if there's anybody that's doing this the right way in terms of being a top competitor, but also being a stalwart in the community, that's Steve Smith. Like that was who he was. And so when he decided to come to the Baltimore Ravens after his time with the Carolina Panthers, I was like, I know exactly what we're getting. We're getting somebody that embodies all of the things that we were proud to have on the defensive side of the ball. Like the mentality in Baltimore with that organization, it's always been defense. It's always been rugged. It's always been dogs. And that was the element that we didn't have on that offensive side of the ball. The Ravens lost that when they lost Anquan Boldin.
Yeah.
And so when they got Steve, when we got Steve Smith, like, it was like, okay, now we back on. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why we were in the playoffs, because we had that identity on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, it was, man, I mean, from day one, Shockey Brown. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember Shockey Brown. He had to learn that the hard way, though. Shockey had to learn the hard way.
If anybody knows, you know, if you know football, there, Big Ten, Big 12, man, Mountain West, Pac 10, Pac 12, like we're considered the cousin, right? We in the family of football, but we're really not respected, and rightfully so. Looking at the bowl season this year, like we literally only had, I think we are 0-5, right, in bowls for Pac 12. So we are not really looked at as a,
like, SEC.
Yeah, we're not.
Yeah.
Right. But Shockey Brown, who we're good now, we're cool. We were actually in a buddy, a former teammate's wedding together. But man, we get there and Shockey's a Texas dude, right? I'm talking about he went to Texas, physicality, all that stuff. And Shockey was a talker, but he wasn't. All football players are talkers, right? They jab, they talk, they're funny, but they also extremely competitive, right? Vinegar and water when it comes to competitive. When they're in Baltimore, they keep it really competitive. Like, they keep count. And, man, me and Shockey used to go at it, and I would come in, and you've heard it, a lot of teammates. I come in, and in Baltimore, I knew I had to earn my stripes. There was a question mark of, can old dude still play? And I came in and Shockey tried me. And Ladarius tried me. There was a few dudes.
So when you say tried me, what they do?
When I say tried me, we sitting there and we be in the cafeteria. And just to say something, what you doing today, old man? Mm. And I used to always tell him, I say, listen, you can press me. Just don't hit me in my face mask. Remember? In the calf. Don't hit me in my face mask. Ninja, what you going to do if I hit you in your face? I'm just telling you. I'm not going to waste my eggs today. But I'm telling you, when we get out on that football field.
Y'all already prepping over breakfast. Y'all in the calf getting
and that's how it was. Baltimore was. Yeah. It was challenging. When you walked in a room, when you walked in the facility, you better be on your P's and Q's. Mm-hmm. Your game will be challenged. Mm-hmm. And so we would just go at it. And so it was Ladarius. It was a lot of those guys. They would challenge me. Sizz, who's my locker mate. Man, they talking about blah, blah, blah. Well, let me see what you got today. 8-9, what you got? And so it's Sizz, I'm in the middle, Sizz is to the right. Canty is one over.
Doom was over there, too.
Doom was over there.
Elvis Doomerville.
Haloti Nada. Mm. Who else? Who else was on Park Avenue?
Oh, Jimmy Smith.
Jimmy Smith.
Y'all called it Park Avenue?
Yeah, because it was a lot of money on that.
I was like, wait a minute, I got a simmer with that metaphor.
It was probably about $400 million worth of earned checks on there. Like, who was it? Haloti was in his third contract. I was on my third or fourth contract.
Yeah.
Sizz,
third contract.
Man,
yeah.
He was on his third contract. Uh-huh. It was a third or fourth. Yeah. It was a whole bunch of us. Uh-huh. It was, I'm telling you, it'll probably $500 million worth of on there.
But you know what's funny, Smitty? You say that, but the way we went to work.
Oh, it was, we set
day,
the tone.
You would have never known it. It was like there was a lot of money, but guys grinded like we were on our rookie deals, like we were still trying to prove ourselves.
The outlier was Shockey Brown. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The outlier was Shockey Brown.
He was
on
like,
that.
He was like Trade Street.
He was over there, bro. No, he was like Public Works. He was Public St. James, Vermont Avenue, right?
I probably in like Baltic Hope Street Avenue. Somewhere.
Yeah, St. James, right? Right. So he's sitting there, and so in practice, so he hits me in my face mask, mm-hmm. and I said something, and Spags was a DB coach at the time, Spagnuolo.
Spagnuolo.
And I said something to him. I said, yo, your guy hit me. And Spags looked at me. Chris looked at me and was like, you ain't going to do nothing. Mm-hmm. Chris saw a look in my eye. This is the middle of training camp. He saw a look in my eye. I walked over there and I said, y'all done fucked up now. Mm-hmm. And walked back. I put my red mouthpiece in my mouth, buttoned up my chin strap. The next play, we had to break down into wide receivers and DBs blocking. And a wide receiver was the running back. The receiver was the blocker. Mm-hmm. Corner. So I go up to go, but...
like old school Oklahoma drill.
Yes. I go
yes,
up.
This is exactly what it was.
It's Oklahoma. I go know
up,
this.
But one of the guys that was supposed to go up was a guy I respected, right? And he and I was like, man, I'm not in the right frame of mind.
Yeah.
And Shockey says, no, don't worry about it, dog. I'll go next.
Oh, it's time to like, strap up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Here we go.
Right. Here we go. We line up, strap up, put my mouthpiece in my mouth. Bobby Engram, the wide receivers coach, now he's the tight ends coach, blows the whistle. Mm-hmm. We run. Boom! Yeah. After we hit, Shockey helmet pops up. Mm-hmm. Now, how does Chris know? First of all, it's buzzing around there that Steve is hot. He's on a tangent. Mm-hmm. Then they also watched it as a unit, and the coaches on the iPad rewatched it. Because you know what happened after we collided? Guess what Shockey did not know we was about to do? What do you think we did?
I mean, if this Oklahoma drill, he probably mad, right? You ready to scrap.
Okay. Tell him what I did right after we collided. Yeah. Shockey pulls down his helmet. What did I do?
You just let him know what it was.
I started boxing him, literally. Boop, boop, boop. Started hitting him.
Oh, that's right. You did. That's right.
His helmet that's pops right, up. Uh-huh. Helmet that's pops right. up. Uh-huh. He puts it down, and now I'm throwing haymakers underneath his chin strap, and he's paused, eating them.
That's right, because we got back in the locker room. I remember
we got back in the locker room because he got back in the locker room.
All we kept saying was that Mr. T line, I pity the fool. Like, we just kept saying that about Shockey Brown. You got pity the fool by Steve Smith. But hey, see here, here's the other part that you got. He got pity the fool by Steve Smith. But I think in that moment he was Agent 89. So what you got to understand, like with Steve, like he's got split personalities. It's like three or four different Steve Smiths. Like no disrespect.
None taken. Like, none of them are offended right now.
I'm letting you cook.
There's Steve. There's Mr. Smith. there's Smitty, and then there's Agent 89. And in that moment, it was Agent 89 because when he put that mouthpiece in, it was something on his mind. And here's the thing. I knew how it was going to end. Shockey Brown didn't. But what Steve didn't tell you was Shockey was always one of those dudes that was popping off in the locker room.
Always
and we felt like, and as veteran players, we're like, okay, that's cool, but you're doing a lot of talking and we're not seeing the production. Okay. So we wanted to let it play out because we felt like this would be a lesson for Shockey so he could learn, so he could be a more productive player and help us win. Like, this was a means to an end for us.
Oh, it was a means to an end.
Yeah. Sears knew what was going to happen. Like,
in other words, we can show you better than we can tell you.
But the problem is.
But see, we had told him before.
That's my point.
We told him all that popping off.
So he got to get shown.
Go out there and ball. You got to go out there and ball. Yeah. But when you pop off, you're going to run up on the wrong one. Yeah. And you're going to learn today. And that's exactly what AJ 89 told him.
Here's the problem, though. No boy was talking me off the ledge. Because it was going down in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Till this day, which is sad, and I'm not saying it in a bragging way, Shockey was sitting in his locker in full uniform. Mm-hmm. Remember, he had his helmet on? Because I told him, coach is like, hey, y'all take it in the locker room. Sid said, nah, coach. Sid's like, we got to keep practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bro, they literally, Helody, few of them was like, man, keep it out of the locker room. Because Shockey was sitting in his locker with his pants on because he expected what I expected. It was going to go down. It was going to be, as we say, it not a little bit. It was going to be a whole bunch of furniture moving. Mm-hmm. And Sizz actually was the one. Sizz like, don't do it, bro. Because I was at the point, I was on red.
Yeah.
I had the code to the nuke button, and I was pushing it. And them boys like, don't do it.
Yeah.
You already got two strikes, Steve. Don't. And we literally, he sat in the
locker. You want to see you get put behind the wall.
Oh.
Third strike.
It was gone. As the season went on, Shockey's biggest encouragement, his biggest cheerleader, was me. When he made a play, I was the first person to let him know. It took me probably about 3 or 4 weeks because I actually was so hot, I had put him in my phone. I had put a reminder in my phone. I said, moving forward now, bro, when you check in, I'm putting you on notice. My goal on Monday, whoop Shockey's ass. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, whoop Shockey's ass. And I had actually put it in my calendar every day. Whoop.
And he walked over and told him in his locker, like, we going at it today.
Every
like, that's
day.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
I'm going to whoop your ass. And finally, after about 3 weeks, I was like, look, you can play in this league. Just keep your mouth closed. Chop wood. You'll be all right. And unfortunately, we had sustained some injuries, like 2 games in, that actually ended up where he had to make a play. And if you go back, that play I made against the Cincinnati Bengals to win the game, comes back, and the play that AJ Green made, guess who that corner was? Who was on?
Shockey
Brown. Mm-hmm. But instead of putting him down, we all encouraged him to let him know that he had earned his stripes, that mistake was not who he was moving forward. That AJ Brown is just a damn really good player. AJ Green, and he is a Pro Bowler. And he just had you today. I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. cuttoitpodcast.com.
Yo, I'm hype. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Would love to get your take on this, Chris. Is what's the psyche as Steve talks about the dynamic and the makeup of the locker room from your vantage point, too, Chris, playing with not only the Baltimore Ravens at that time, but with the Giants, win the Super Bowl and with the Dallas Cowboys. What's the psyche of a playoff team? And now as we're getting ready to go into the playoffs and subsequently leading to the Super Bowl, what's the psyche of then a Super Bowl winning team? Like bringing in all together those different types of personality traits and characters.
Well, the mentality is not the same. When I was with the Dallas Cowboys and we were in the playoffs, that was arguably the most talented team that I've ever been a part of in 2007. We were 13-3, the number one seed in the conference, and we were one and done. We lost to the eventual Super Bowl champion New York Giants. Now, that was a team in our division that we had boat raced twice in the regular season. But when it comes to success in the postseason, and Steve can attest to this, it's not just about being able to have talent. It's about the chemistry. It's about the culture that you have in the building. And that's what allowed my Giants team in 2011 to win the chip. Like, to this day, that's the only team not to have double-digit wins to actually win the Super Bowl. And the reason for that, the reason why we were able to survive a stretch during the regular season where we lost four straight games, was because you had the right mix of guys in that locker room. You had a core of players that had a confidence that they could get it done because a lot of them had done it before 4 years earlier. But then you also had some guys that were hungry and that were trying to prove that they were elite players in this league. There were guys that were trying to establish themselves as young players. It was the right blend. It wasn't always sunshine and roses in that locker room. I didn't like every player in that locker room, but I loved every player in that locker room. And to Steve's point, that's why you ride. It's got to be about something bigger than yourself when you go out there and play, especially in the biggest stages and the biggest games in this league. If it's only about you, you can make selfish decisions. You can make business decisions that don't necessarily lead to team success. But when it's about the guy next to you, there's a certain sacrifice.
And a trust. There's
a certain trust that you're willing to repay with sacrificing your body for the greater good. Like Tom Coughlin used to stand up in front of us all the time and he would say, my job as a coach is to be your mirror. All I do is tell you what I see. The other thing that I'm responsible for doing is trying to get you to do what you don't want to do so you can become what you want to become. I think that 2011 Giants team is a perfect example of that because we were not the most talented team in the NFL. We were not.
But you guys hit it at the right moment. And it's also it's also hitting it at the right moment. You got to think about it. Y'all had, I believe, R.J. McCorders, right, as a DB.
No, R.W. wasn't on that team. He was on the 2017.
Gotcha.
So we had Deion Grant.
Yes.
Deion Grant was our leader.
DG.
Deion and Antrell.
Yep. So you had some players, basically, were they at the elite level? On paper, no. But when you went against them, man, them son of guns was elite. They could tell you what route you're running. They could watch this, watch that. They spent enough time studying. And when they played, they were well versed, well prepared, and the anticipation of the play calling was dynamic. And they were able to execute it as well. Right. I think that's one of the biggest things that I think young folks that are playing today lack, which is finishing and execution. Because I am.
And notice you didn't say talent.
Nope. Because you can be a high energy practice guy. But if on whatever designated day you're playing, if you don't execute, then that high energy doesn't mean anything. You can go to work and have a lot of high energy, but if you get fired, guess what you ain't got? A paycheck, right? So execution. And I believe sometimes people think about, because this football stuff now, sports has become more too about personality, and sometimes you can fool people. And I'm not going to name no names, but I'm just saying, I'm not trying to like talk around Carolina, I'm talking about the league overall. You can have some players who are really good in the community, but piss poor execution on Sunday. And it takes you a while to figure out that they're fraudulent, that they're fake CEOs, that what they really are managers, shift managers who can hide behind stuff. But when you're a real CEO, see, he was a D tackle. So he was a CEO of Chris Canty LLC as a D tackle. And he went against a guard and a center who were CEOs. And you found out real quickly that CEO, that business, that company, a lot better than that other company he was going up against. And that's the difference. These young guys, and there's guys like Cooper Kupp, that young man, he figures it out, and he's a great executor, right? Great finisher, man. But there's some players out there, and I'm not naming names or trying to say that, but I'm trying to be honest. Not all 53 guys on the roster are great. Some of them are just butt-ass average, right? And there's nothing wrong with it.
Yep.
But because they have that star or that emblem, that shield, they get a hall pass. Man, that shield and that star can't say your ass on between on white lines, and they say go. It's fourth and three. Playing against him is fourth and three. Playing against Chris Canty, he's with whoever he's with. We going fourth and three. They got to pass it. Chris Canty, they gonna either run some kind of trickeration, run a screen, but if they don't run this screen and they run in a pass, and he knows I'm on the other side, he knows they going to one guy. He's going to be the first look, and that first look is going to be me. Yeah. And so I'm looking in the huddle going, Chris is looking at me. They all looking at me. Check this, check that. And I'm looking going, I got an answer because I can't let the men and women, and I said women, because all these men have women and children that depend on they're doing their job, and then when the quarterback delivers the ball, I can't let them down. I can't take food off their table, take gas out of their minivans. And so I'm going, and I realize what it is. And so football – man, football is one of those things, it gives you so much. It can buy you and free you up to do things that, man, I just feel it. I feel me and Chris and a lot of guys we've had on this podcast as professional players, professionals. Man, I lived 1,000 kings' lives. I've lived in palaces. We've been able to travel the world, do things. But that's because we execute. And I'm not saying it in a flex. I'm not saying it now. I'm just saying what it is. But at the end of the day, it goes to, if you can execute and you can do it and you can follow through and you have that ability to keep everything together, man, it's probably one of the things that you can never duplicate. And you can do it with men that you've sweat with, that they know your hustle, they know they grind, but they also know your failures, and they know your skeletons because they've watched you suffer in a weight room, get injured in the training room, bury your heart and your soul, cry when you get injured, look in the eyes and the souls of men after they've lost and been defeated, and then do it all over again or more.
Yep. That's the beautiful part about sports, but also football, man. Yep. And I think that football is the greatest team game because you got to have all 11 seeing it the same way in order to be successful in any given play. And the thing that you said, Steve, that really resonated right there is like the game of football pays you back. And when you say that, people automatically go to the money, but you also go to the relationship.
Yep.
Like, I mean, there are guys that I play with, college and pro, those are going to be lifelong brothers to me. And the reason why it's like that is because they see the sacrifice that I was willing to make for them.
Not the fake sacrifice.
And that developed the bond. That developed the bond. That developed the trust level. Like that guy knew that he could depend on me. If how he feeds his family is dependent on how I'm going to play on Sunday, he knew he could depend on me. And that's important.
And that's because we're in the weight room. We're on the field together and he sees, man, Tuesday – we did it wrong.
Ain't no off day.
Wednesday, we in there. Wednesday, we did it wrong. Thursday, we did 3 out of 5 right. Friday, we walking through it. Saturday is our last opportunity. I don't know, coach. Look at him. He'll get it. And then on Sunday, he got it. He didn't just get it. He blew it up. tackle the guy, caused a fumble. We picked it up, and then all of a sudden, then I'm in the same weight room as him, maybe doing, I know for a fact, doing a lot less weights than Chris, yeah. Right? And then giving the ball, so just all of that. Man, you know, talk about, you with the Dallas Cowboys, man, talk about that star. That star gives some guys some average dudes. Man, that star like $3 billion, man. You see an ugly brother, you know what they say is, man, money is not everything. But it's right there up with oxygen. Yeah, you know, I'll take
it. It's nice to have. I'm going to turn it down.
Right. And
oh, man.
You go fourth round, 132nd overall pick out of University of Virginia. And you go there and tell me the impact of playing for America's team with the Dallas Cowboys. And you got one of probably the most intriguing, intense, straightforward, but yet sometimes will play with your mind with Bill Parcells.
So for me, getting drafted to Dallas was cool, but I wasn't excited about it because I went in the fourth round and I thought I was going to be, you know, first round pick or second round pick, but I had some major injuries coming out of college. Dislocated my knee, tore three ligaments, and then I had a detached retina. So I'm getting to Dallas, and they got a ton of injury concerns around me. They don't even know if I'm going to ever be able to play football again. So I'm pissed about the situation, but I go into it with a lot of experience. And I say a lot of experience because I played for Al Groh at the University of Virginia. Mm-hmm. And anybody that knows football knows
he's
that
a rough around
Al Groh was one of Parsons. Yeah, rough around the edges, but he was one of Bill Parcells' lieutenants when he was with the New York Giants winning Super Bowls. So at the time, Bill was switching from a 4-3 defense to a 34 defense, and that's all I played in college. Mm. So when I get into the locker room, I'm with guys like Leroy Glover and Greg Ellis, and you know, they're trying to ask me about what we're doing defensively. Hell, even Mike Zimmer's asking me about how the defensive front needs to be called in order to be able to play stack defense because I played for 4 years in college. And oh, by the way, one of my mentors while I was in Charlottesville was Howie Long because he lived there. Mm-hmm. So I knew pretty much everything there is to know about 3-4 defense.
Cheater.
So
he came in like the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, he over there playing Contra with the cheat code.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, it wasn't a huge learning curve for me. The biggest adjustment for me was going up against grown men. And the thing that going to Dallas did for me was I got a chance to practice against Larry Allen and Flozell Adams every single day. Every single day. I remember my first training camp practice, I had a one-on-one pass rush against Larry Allen.
Do tell. And how'd that work out?
I tried a bullshit spin move. Mm-hmm. And he caught me mid-spin by my
right up under there. Yeah, right up under there. I knew where that was going.
And chokeslammed me and then started seawalking. And I looked at my defensive line coach, Casey Rogers, and he said, I got good news and I got bad news. I said, well, hell, what's the good news? The good news is that's about as best as you're going to see in the NFL for the rest of your career. I said, okay, well, what's the bad news? The bad news is you're going to practice against that song every day. but that was what allowed me to learn the NFL game. Kind of like that teachable moment that Shockey Brown had with Steve Smith. That was my teachable moment in a much different way. But he was right because I never went into a game and felt overwhelmed by any of the opponents that I was going up against.
Cut through it. Cut through it. Let's get down to it. Cut through it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yo, I'm hype. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Steve, I think you hit on something that not a lot of people talk about, but it's a real thing. Dallas does make guys stars, literally and figuratively. The problem with that is guys think they're a lot better than they actually are. And that's why Dallas Cowboys haven't won a championship since 1995. That's why. They have this perception of what they are, and sometimes that gets in the way of doing the things that are hard in order to move your program forward. Making sure that on a day-in, day-out basis, guys are grinding. It's too comfortable down there in Dallas more often than not. It's too because everybody's praising you. Bill Parcells used to say, don't take the cheese. Don't take the cheese. But when you have an owner in Jerry Jones that loves stars and caters to them, it makes it tough to have the right mindset in order to compete and win at the highest levels of the sport. Hmm. I love Jerry Jones. I'm just saying that's the reality.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because there are some players over the years. Dez Bryant, he's a star. He's a hell of a player. He was a guy that you had to – he kept offensive coordinators
You're up. Counting for Dez.
Oh, you – yeah, absolutely. There's a guy like Miles Austin who – he played well. Mm-hmm. But because he played for Dallas, he was a superstar. But then when you look at his statistics, you hear the word superstar and you look at his stats – and my man is under 10,000 yards total. That ain't a superstar, right? And it's not shaded.
Was he a superstar, though?
But when we were playing down there, he's dating Kim Kardashian.
Sitting
you
over.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To your point, though.
Yeah. And it's not.
Tony Romo was dating Jessica Simpson. He's a star. Mm-hmm. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. But sometimes all of that stuff can get in the way of a team focusing on the things that's going to help them do high-level winning. Steve, I'm telling you, man, 15 Pro Bowlers in 2007. If you didn't make the Pro Bowl, you was an alternate. That's how it was with the Cowboys, because we were that good.
So then how did you not take the cheese? And
we did.
No, I'm saying you. No. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you individually. I know you. No, I'm not saying collectively. I'm talking about you individually.
Well, I was still Poe. I was still
you know, like, listen, he getting body slammed by Larry Allen every week.
You making $200,000 a year. You like, I ain't got time.
Well, you brought it back up. I was gonna ask you, what was your view of that Seawalk? Like, was it more Snoopish or was it more like little Bow Wowish?
I don't know. From my perspective, flat on my back.
That's what I'm asking you. What was your view of it?
I couldn't really tell.
Yeah. Hey, or the kind of DJ Quick.
As Les Brown would say, when you get knocked down, if you can look up, get up. That boy Chris was like, man, I don't want to get up.
I thought he broke something.
Categorize your NFL experience. You talked about Dallas. Now you're transitioning to a, you're not also now just in a historical organization. Now you're in what they, Gotham City, right? Now you're in New York, New Jersey, high expectations, right? You're on a team with a Manning. You got Michael Strahan. You know, you got all of these guys on the team. And then you got expectations. And y'all are kind of, you're living it a little bit, the expectation on the football field, and you let the folks down, right? You give them a little bit, just a little taste, and then all of a sudden, you don't live up to the expectations. So what was your NFL experience after leaving Dallas, becoming a free agent, going to the to the Giants?
Yeah, so for me, I'm from New York. I was born in New York. So it was an opportunity to come back to the crib. They gave me a monster contract. Like, and I remember being in Jerry Reese's office and he gave me a contract offer. And I was like, well, this ain't what I wanted. Like, I wanted a certain number in my average annual value. And Jerry Reese was like, well, I can't pay you that because we got guys that have made Pro Bowls and won Super Bowls that aren't getting paid that. And I told Jerry Reese, that sounds like a you problem. Like, if you can't give me my money, then I'm going somewhere else. And I already had another team that was on deck that was ready to fly me from New York to their place and get the deal done. And so they ended up doing the deal. And it was this huge relief because I had been grinding for 4 years trying to get to this paper. And so that first year in New York was kind of like a paid vacation for me. Like, I wasn't the best version of myself. I was eating good. It was Del Frisco's. It was STK. I'm partying in Greenhouse.
Mr. Childs.
I'm kicking it with the Knicks players, yeah, the Yankees dudes. Like, you know, because everybody knows my name, and I got that bag, and I'm from the – so it's just like I'm just living it up, yeah. Like – you know, YOLO. M6 in front of M2. That's what it was. Like, if you talk on any given day of the week, if you were trying to figure out what the night spot was, guys would come to me because I knew it was cracking. Like, I knew I had a schedule. Like, and it wasn't about working out. It was like, okay, it's this club on this night. It's this club on this. Like, I was living it. Like, that first year, Jerry Reese absolutely did not get his money worth. That was the first year.
Well, at least give us a good club experience. Give me a good club story.
Yeah. No.
Oh, he got illustrations. I love it. Yeah. Hope these ain't photos.
Hey, dog.
Nah, I ain't got no illustrations. I got to plug my PowerPoint.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hold on, so
yeah. I thought
he's getting a whiteboard.
I don't want that.
He's getting an external hard drive.
Hey, he
about to die.
Let me tell you something.
I can't let y'all get that evidence.
Let me tell you something.
I need permission. I need permission slips from a lot of guys before I can get to them stories.
And my guest room ain't never had a 6'8" dude in the guest room. I don't even know what that bed looks like. Look, compared to you, my house, we got the bed of midgets, right? Compared to 6'8". I don't even know how to, you got a spare bed? Nah, brother, no.
Yeah.
So I ain't trying to move in with me.
We used to kick it heavy. But after that first year, that was time for me to just kind of relax and enjoy having the finance and security. But then I got refocused on, okay, this is my career. Let me make sure I'm a professional. We're trying to accomplish something here. We got a core of guys that can actually do some winning. And I got back on my grind because I wanted, like every NFL player, they want to have that championship ring on their resume. And especially in a place like New York, like you win in New York, they will never forget you. Like a part of why I'm working in sports media now is because I got that Super Bowl ring in 2011, you know? So it's just one of those things. Like I got back on that type of grind. 2010, we won 10 games, but we didn't get into the playoffs. And then obviously 2011, we sneak into the playoffs, winning the division against the Cowboys in week 17. And then we went on a run from there. in 2012 when the Giants decided that they were going to cut me after that season, that was one of those things that was hard to swallow because it was the place that I wanted to be. It was the guys that I wanted to be working with. And for the first time in my football career, I was told I wasn't good enough. You know, I got fired. And that's kind of one of those things that drove me to want to go to Baltimore because that was a franchise that had a lot of cast-offs, had a lot of misfits, a lot of guys that had the same mentality. And so I wanted to be a part of what Isaiah put together just because I had my own axe to grind, which was to try to prove to Jerry Reese and the New York Giants that they made a mistake in getting rid of me. And that's where I actually rediscovered my passion for football, you know, taking it back to when I first started playing in high school, because it wasn't about the money. It wasn't about a quest for a ring. It wasn't about some agenda. It was about just enjoying the opportunity to dominate the man across from me every single play. That was the collective mentality of the Raiders.
What do you mean specifically your passion? You reignited your passion for football. Yeah.
People will naturally assume that as athletes, you guys eat, sleep, breathe it 24/7. That's the only thing. And in business or corporate America, like everyone doesn't wake up like, you know what? I can't wait to get to work. Right. Like you have other things that you have within your life.
I would disagree. You have to, during the season, you have to eat, breathe football because outside of playing.
So that's what he's saying. Is that what you're saying when you lost your passion?
No. That's not what I'm saying. It's like the business side of football can sometimes get in the way of your passion for the game. And so for me, like I was riding high after we won the Super Bowl, but then I had to have a knee surgery. I had to have an eye surgery. Only played in 8 games in 2012, and then the Giants cut me. So when they cut me, it's like, damn, I got told for the first time I wasn't good enough. Yeah. And that hurt me in a way.
It wasn't your fault.
It kind of affected me.
It wasn't your fault. Like some of the, you get an injury, you don't wake up and say, man, let me get a knee injury today, right?
Especially microfractures.
Yes.
Like I had to have microfractures. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it's one of those things like, man, why is all of this happening to me? Why are they doing this to me? Why is this going down like that? It takes away from it because like there's an underbelly to the sport. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we're getting rid of you. We don't want you here anymore. Like imagine this, you won a Super Bowl the year before, they call you in after the next year and they say, we appreciate everything you've done for us, but we're cutting you today or we're firing you today. We got X, Y, and Z, they're gonna clear out your locker for you. And you're no longer a part of this organization.
Yeah, where do you want your stuff shipped? Like all your whole, your whole life of your locker.
And
they box it up and they ask you, where would you like it to be? What did you do with that stuff? How did you handle that?
It's still in a box in my crib in South Carolina now, Smitty. It's still in a box, bro. I still hadn't even gone through it. And it's crazy, man, because these are people that tried to frame it as this is family. We all in this together. Like this is, you know, and yet when they fired me, I talked to the general manager. He fired me. I talked to Coach Coughlin. And then when I got back out of Coach Coughlin's office, they had a security officer there to escort me out of the building to my car. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, we worked together to put this trophy in the trophy case, and then this is how you treat me. Mm. So again, when I say rediscovering my passion for football, I don't necessarily mean it in the sense that I didn't love the game at some point. I just didn't like the business of the game. But I was able to put all that to the side in Baltimore just because of the mentality that the general manager, Ozzie Newsome, had. And the mentality that the guys in the locker room had, which was, listen, all of us are misfits. All of us are rejects. And guess what? We're going to shove it up everybody else's ass in the NFL. And that's why we brought you here.
What's funny? they may still have it, all of my stuff. When I was in Baltimore, I had two. When I was in Carolina, I had two lockers. The locker of my stuff, and then my shoes, like because of my custom shoes, because of my feet and all that stuff. But when they cut me, I grabbed my photos, I grabbed my mouthpiece, I grabbed some significant things, and I grabbed my shoulder pads. All the other Panther stuff that they had, all my cleats, I left it. The shit's still in there. Donnie was like, hey, you know, if you want that, no, I'm good. You can have it. 3-4 boxes of stuff still sitting in there, my name labeled on there, and I go, no, I don't want it. One, it's not I don't want it because of I was upset. It was a transition of business. I'm not wearing that, like, back out in the community. Like, you ain't going to see me walking through the grocery store in some Panther gear cleats. Like, got to use them. Let me get this avocado. Right? And it's just because you going on to the next team. So the only thing I had is my stuff that was essential to me that I needed, and then my shoulder pads. My shoulder pads were the same shoulder pads I wore my whole career. Wore them in Baltimore. They tried to get me to change them because of the color. I was like, no, I want those shoulder pads. But you just the business aspect of it. Man, it's so, I don't want to say grimy, but it's a business, right? Yeah. And it's, man, we love you until you cannot work for us anymore. Yeah. We'll be cordial. Don't make a big scene, right? Security's going to walk you down. For me, and they cut me, I already knew they was cutting. My deal was, don't make me drive my ass down there at 8 o'clock when you knew you was going
to. You know you're going to do this.
You knew you was going to cut me last night.
Yeah.
Because now I told them. Smitty, Steve-on, Agent 89, I'm acting fool. So if you cut me Saturday morning and you knew Friday night or Thursday afternoon you was going to cut me, your ass better cut me the day you know you was going to cut me. Because if I drive
I ain't trying to make this extra trip.
If I get my cup of coffee, warm my car up.
And I got to turn back around.
And I got to turn back around. Somebody going to catch these hands.
And Steve, you're exactly right. And not only did they make me burn my gas when I got cut by the Giants, but I had to pay that toll coming across the bridge.
In New Jersey.
I feel like that needs to be, I need to be reimbursed.
Oh, man.
Hey, you emotionally unstable that, still. You drive past that toll like... That $5, they knew they could have saved.
Man, I need to expense this.
Oh, $5, man. Man, that's $13.
Man, you gave us all that we asked for and more, brother. It's been a privilege, honor to talk to you, man. Teammate, a brother, a dude I admire, man. A halfway charlatan, but my man is in the same way, man.
Gotta
I love
pass. You got to pass, bro.
I love Charlotte. He loves Charlotte. Mm. But I'm from L.A., ain't from Brooklyn, man, at the end of the day, right? And,
Absolutely. Steve, it's an honor and a privilege to be on your podcast, and the feeling is mutual in terms of your impact on my life. And I just want to continue to send good vibes and blessings over you and your family. And, again, I can't say enough about the work that you do in the community, man. Keep doing that, man. Not a lot of people talk about it, but there's a need for that, man. The work that you do with domestic violence and highlighting that, man, continue with that, brother. We love you for that.
Appreciate it, brother. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith, Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut To It. Cut To It with Steve Smith, Sr. That is me, is a production of Cut To It, LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut To It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Sho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut To It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator
Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.
Hey everyone, it's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready, and remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.